Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with our producer this hour, Mr. Evan Preston. Welcome in, Evan, and welcome to all of you. It is Thursday, June 15th, 2023. Glad to be along with you on a Thursday afternoon. Mr. Preston fills in for our number. It is truly like a relay around here. We don't know what's around the corner, but we'll get to the finish line regardless. We're glad to have you here, Evan. Thank you very much for helping out today. We appreciate you, appreciate Mr. Zommers. Of course, most of all, we appreciate each and every one of you listening across the state of Wisconsin. We have some business to do here, some brewers business. The Milwaukee Brewers have fallen on a little bit of a hard time. I believe a 6-game losing streak now. But the good news is they are back home. Starting, I believe, tonight. But these are baseball tickets for tomorrow evening, Friday evening, and at at AmFam Field. The Milwaukee Brewers will be back at home. They're going to start off a winning streak. I can just feel it. We have 4 tickets for you. And for tomorrow night's game, Friday night's game, 7:10 p.m., here are the requirements. You cannot have won in the last 30 days, all right? And also, you have to have a smartphone, a cell phone, because there are no more paper tickets. We only do it, well, not us, it's the Brewers, only do it electronically. So we have to email you these tickets. So this is for tomorrow. If you meet those requirements, you're in like Flynn, Matt Flynn. Here's the deal. Here's the question. Who are the Milwaukee Brewers playing tomorrow night? At AmFam Field, 844-967-2789. First person with the right answer wins. Who are the Milwaukee Brewers playing tomorrow night at AmFam Field? 844-967-2789. Dial carefully. 844-967-2789. 4 tickets for you and 3 friends. Give us a call. Who are the Brewers playing tomorrow night at AmFam Field? First person that gets the correct answer will put you on the air here, and Evan will put you on the air. We'll see who's calling. These are great seats, by the way. Club-level seats, all right? We're not messing around. Padded seats. You have your own kind of entry area. Bathrooms right off the seats. A concession stand that's set up just for the club-level seats. You're looking into the Brewers dugout because you're sitting on the third base side, up elevated a little bit. See a complete seat in the ballpark. Great seats. Let's go to the phones now with our first caller. This is Kyle from Green Bay. Kyle from Green Bay, what say you, sir? Who are the Milwaukee Brewers playing tomorrow night at AmFam Field?
They are playing the Pittsburgh Pirates, and I hope I'm going to be there to see it.
You are, Kyle. Congratulations. You are absolutely correct. The Pittsburgh Pirates are the team coming to town. Have you got 3 friends, family members, or somebody off the street you could take with you?
I sure do.
Thank you. How are you listening to us right now, over the air or on the app?
Yep, I'm listening to you in my car over the air.
That's great. On our new Green Bay station, WGBW, that is 1590 AM and 97.9 FM up in Green Bay. Kyle, thank you so very much. Congratulations. You're going to the game tomorrow night. Stay on the line now as we'll put you on hold, and Mr. Evan Preston will take your info, and he will be all set. Congratulations to Kyle in Green Bay. Fantastic. Going to be going down to Milwaukee, straight down there. Not a bad drive from Green Bay anymore to Milwaukee. And again, our new Green Bay station up there in Green Bay, Wisconsin, WGBW 1590 AM and 97.9 FM. Remember, you can listen to the Milwaukee Brewers all season long on our 2 flagship stations on Civic Media for the Brewers. If you're over in the Green Bay area, in the Fox Valley, and pretty much from Shawano down to Sun Prairie on the eastern side of the state, you can listen to us on the big 1100 AM. That is Oshkosh Air Support out of Oshkosh, and if you're in the southwest part of the state, on WRCE AM 1450 and FM 107.7, WRCE News from the Center, Richland Center, Oshkosh. Two of our great stations who are our flagship Milwaukee Brewer stations, Bob Uecker on those home calls, as Phil Nee said earlier from WRCO, WRCE, as he called that state championship game for high school baseball today, the Ithaca Bulldogs in southwest Wisconsin, the Division IV state champions. Phil said it earlier. There's no better way to listen to baseball than on the radio. No better way to enjoy it, I should say, than listen on the radio, whether it's Phil and Henry down there in southwest Wisconsin on WRCO, WRCE, or whether it is Bob Uecker and the crew on the Milwaukee Brewers Radio Network. Oshkosh Air Support in Oshkosh and WRCE News in the Center in southwest Wisconsin. We'll have more tickets. Be listening to all the great civic media programming throughout the day as we'll be giving away more tickets each and every homestand right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. When we come back, we're going to pick up this discussion that we had with Jason Stein a little bit earlier on school funding, on this breakout deal between the governor and the state legislature, and also what this means for shared revenue for places like Milwaukee, Milwaukee County, and the smaller municipalities as well. We'll take your phone calls, so don't go anywhere. 844-967-2789. Want to hear from you. 844-967-2789. This is the Todd Allball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Pursuing truth wherever it may lead, this is the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 2:15. Welcome back to hour number two of the show, along with our producer engineer, Mr. Evan Preston. Glad to have you along with us on a Thursday, June 15th, 2023. Don't forget, stay with us. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, 2:30, is Janet Ginsburg. She is a writer, producer, formerly of The Daily Show. Yes, that Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Spent a little bit of time there. Also has done some reality TV. Tells us a little bit about, I'm anxious to find this out. What happens, how real is reality TV? Because, I mean, you hear a lot of, well, it's actually staged. We'll ask her that, what her opinion is on reality TV. She has worked with a lot of big names out in Hollywood. So we will ask her that and what it's like being a writer as well as a producer, especially in the current conditions of the Writer Guild of America strike. That is coming up at the bottom of the hour. And again, congratulations to our listener in Green Bay for winning those tickets to the Milwaukee Brewers as they take on the Pittsburgh Pirates tomorrow night at 7:10 on the Milwaukee Brewers Radio Network, including WISS, Oshkosh Air Support in Oshkosh, and WRCE News from the Center in Richland Center. Want to thank our last guest last hour, Jason Stein, the Vice President and Director of Research at Wisconsin Policy Forum, coming in, giving us a little background on school vouchers, on the funding for private schools and public schools. Want to go now to WISS Politics. And if you're not familiar with WISS Politics, you need to get there. Go to WISS Politics, that's WISPolitics.com. WISS Politics, great site. And they have a story online, legislature signs off on boost to choice and charter schools. Choice, charter, and special needs students would be in line for significant boosts in the state-funded vouchers they receive under legislation that cleared the legislature late last night. The bill was part of a broader package that GOP legislators struck with Dem Governor Tony Evers that included a boost in shared revenue and additional funding for K-12 schools. The shared revenue bill cleared the Senate early today on a bipartisan vote, while the K-12 funding was added to the budget by the Joint Finance Committee yesterday. The voucher bill is that third piece in the agreement. What is your opinion on this? If you're someone who sends your kid to a voucher school, I'd love to hear from you. If you're more of a public school advocate, if your kids go to a public school, we'd love to hear from you on this as well. Because there's two different schools, pun intended, two different schools of thought on this. All right? People have their own, you know, ideas of what's happening here. Give us a call, 844-967-2789. Again, 844-967-2789. Another great reporter, A.J. Biaport, now working for CBS 58 in Milwaukee. He writes this, Wisconsin lawmakers passed a bill last night increasing state funding for both public and private voucher schools. The sweeping education plan was a last-minute addition to an agreement between Democratic Governor Tony Evers and Republican leaders in the Assembly and Senate over how to boost funding for local governments. In the final vote, only a quartet of Democratic lawmakers voted for the bill, which was part of the bigger compromise negotiated by the Evers administration. The Senate passed the bill 24-9, with all Republicans voting for it. Two Democratic senators, LaTanya Johnson and Lena Taylor, both of Milwaukee, joined Republicans in voting yes. The Assembly then passed the bill 62-21. As with the Senate, all Republicans voted in favor of the bill, while two Democrats joined them, both from the Milwaukee area, on the Assembly Democrats to support the bill. So there is a little bit of bipartisan breaking out here. But my big question is, who gets the better end of the stick? My personal feeling is that the voucher schools came out much better. What's your feeling? 844-967-2789. Again, 844-967-2789. Reading on with the story from A.J. Biaport, Johnson said on the floor she supported Milwaukee families having quality public and choice school options, but opposed tying the school funding plan to the local government bill that funded Milwaukee's future, talking about this shared revenue bill. Her quote, Governor Evers had a gun to his head, Johnson said. Either he gave my colleagues what they wanted or Milwaukee into insolvency. And he chose to save Milwaukee. Progressives opposed the bill, maintained that conservatives got the better end of the deal because private schools enrolled in Wisconsin's choice program got a bigger increase in per student funding than public schools. Under the plan, Wisconsin would provide more than $1 billion in additional funding to K-12 public schools and amounts to an increase of about $325 per student. Republicans said that increase made the bill a win for everyone. But private choice schools would see an increase of $1,100 per student at the K-8 level, according to a fiscal estimate submitted by the Department of Public Instruction. Private schools would receive an increase of nearly $3,000 per student. So $3,000 per student is not the same as $325 per student for the public schools. Who got the better end of the stick here? I think it's pretty obvious. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Could talk about this school funding or shared revenue, whichever you prefer. Let's go to Denise in Green Bay. Denise in Green Bay, welcome to the program. What say you? Well, hang on, Denise. You weren't on the air. Go ahead. Now you're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Charter, voucher, private schools won in a big way. And public schools are being significantly hurt.
And why do you say that? Just the money alone? All right, I guess that was Denise. Thanks for calling in. I agree with you. As I just said, this reporting by A.J. Biaport at CBS 58 in Milwaukee, doing a great job of it. I totally agree with that. That public schools, just looked at the face of it, came up short. Let's go to Jack in Merrimack. Jack in Merrimack, welcome to the program, sir. What say you on school funding?
Well, first of all, let me give you a little background. I taught for over 40 years. I taught in all grades, from sixth grade to about sophomore level college, I taught in public, private, and parochial school. First thing I want to say about it is this, putting money into private schools is the old robbing Peter to pay Paul trick. Those funds come from someplace, and you can't really fully support two complete educational systems. Second thing I want to say is the standardized testing on which so many of our Republican friends rely for quality of schools show no significant difference between public and private schools. Are there some better private schools? Yes. Are there some better public schools? Absolutely. But as far as I'm concerned, spending public money to support a private institution is welfare. That's all it is. It's welfare for the private school. Finally, school choice means just that. The school gets to choose. Public schools have to take everybody, but if there's somebody that is too expensive to deal with in private schools, they don't get the help they need. And I know, because when I was in teaching in a private school, that's exactly what I was told. I had a couple of kids that had some problems that, in fact, their staff in that private school was trained to work with. I went to the administration. I said, these guys need help. Here are the people that can help them. They said, we can't do that. We don't have the money.
Jack, so, I could not have asked for a better caller if I had mixed it up, recruited you myself, and I didn't. I really appreciate the call. As someone who taught in the public and private school, explain to people in a minute or so here, Jack, explain what you just said in terms of, you know, if there's a kid that has a disciplinary problem and the private school can kick him out. The private school doesn't have to take him, whereas the public school, you're stuck with that kid regardless. Am I correct? Hang on, Jack. You're not on the air. Hang on.
But it's not just that. It is other special ed needs students as well. And that's what I was talking about in this particular case. But if there's a kid with discipline problems, a private school can look at that and say, in his background, we don't want anything to do with him. Graduation rates might be better in the private school. My personal opinion, and this is an opinion, not based on any statistical evidence, but my personal opinion is that's because they get to choose whom they can take. And the people that really have trouble passing in schools in general, they won't take somebody like that.
Jack, you're 100% right. I come from a family of educators. You're 100% right. Thank you, Jack, for calling in from Merrimack. Let's go down to Mark in the Sack. Mark in the Sack, what say you?
Yeah, I think that the voucher schools made ours a whole lot better than the public schools, and I'm part of a public school education. And I was reading in high school level when I was in sixth grade. I mean, that's due to the fact that, I was read to when I was a child. They all kinds of books were on when I was a kid. And I guess the question that's popped into my head, was Scott Jensen involved in lobbying this at all in the
he's still around. He's still a lobbyist. I don't know for sure that I can't. My guess is yes, but I don't know that for a fact.
Because that's a real burr under my blanket, because the guy should never have been allowed to be a lobbyist again, except for the machinations of Brad Schimmel, who was the Waukesha district attorney, county attorney at the time, and got a change of venue for him and got the charges dismissed in Dane County, where he committed the crime, moved to friendly Waukesha County. And I wonder if Mr. Schimmel is getting any money from the people who paymasters of Scott Jensen and is for his judicial campaigns, the American Family Institute or something like that,
it's a great...
really just, I turned back to a little reference in a history book that I had about the, I don't know if it was the Persians or the Babylonians who took judicial corruption rather seriously. If a judge was convicted of...
Mark, I'm sorry, I got to cut you off. I got another caller. Thanks for calling in. Mark on the Sack, as always, really appreciate you. I want to get Denise real quick. Denise, you got about 45 seconds. I apologize, but I'm against the clock. What say you?
Well, public schools were the losers in this legislation. They really needed $1,510 just to keep up with inflation, and they didn't get it. They've been underfunded since 2010, and they continue to lose. And they're providing a lot of services to private schools. And the vouchers for special ed are much higher, and we're only getting 33% reimbursement in public schools, and yet we're providing the services to private schools. So,
Denise, appreciate your call. Thank you so much. I'm against the clock, but I agree with you. You're absolutely right. Stay tuned. We've got Janet Ginsburg next on the Todd Allbowles Show on Civic Media. Hello?
Hello.
Janet, how are you? Thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Oh, of course. How are you doing?
I am fantastic. Thank you for coming on the show. I was just saying to introduce you there. You've been involved with a lot of different networks and entertainment industry places like Showtime, Discovery, CNN, HBO Max, National Geographic, BBC, among several. Really cool to be able to talk to somebody and give us a little behind-the-scenes perspective.
Yes, yes. Well, what kind of perspective would you like to hear about? There's so many.
Well, first, I always like to just, for our listeners that don't know you, don't know your work, tell us a little bit about where you're from and your background a little bit, how you got into the writing and producing field.
Sure. Okay. Well, I am currently in Southern California, Los Angeles, which I'm actually a native of Los Angeles. Definitely a little cloudier here than usual, but I'm sure people in Wisconsin love to hear Californians complain about the weather. So I'll hold off on that. And basically, you know, I always wanted to write. And my whole life, I kind of was pushing toward that. I ended up going to a film program. And then I got out of school. I worked in magazines. And then basically, I kind of was, you know, it was pretty much the very beginning era of kind of the documentary reality world when I was sort of coming up. And so that's kind of where I ended up going. There was a lot of freedom back then. Nobody was really paying, you know, they weren't paying attention. It was a cheap form of programming. So you had kind of a lot of carte blanche to make really fun and interesting shows, which I think is sort of why it ended up exploding so much. And, you know, and then basically, for better or for worse, I just sort of stuck it out and I've pretty much been in that kind of world ever since.
What were some of the first reality shows that you worked on?
The first thing that I worked on was at E! Entertainment Television, and it was I worked on Fashion Emergency, which was at the time a very popular show that nobody really remembers probably. And then I did some of their Emmy specials and just, you know, lots of E! Obviously in those days was all very celebrity focused. So just, you know, watching a lot of celebrities do a lot of press information, kind of cutting that down into something that was fun and interesting.
So when we see these reality shows, and now of course they're all over the place, how much of it is really reality, and how much of this stuff is staged?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, my personally, I don't tend to work in those shows so much, but the information is pretty much the same across the board, which is these, you know, it really does depend on the show.
Right.
There are shows where, you know, you just kind of go in, you know, you're going to talk to a person who's kind of a showman, and, you know, you can just let them go and kind of see what happens. There's other shows where, you know, you film somebody, if any life, you took a look at any life for 40 hours a week, not that exciting. But when you kind of cut it, if we take, say, just an average person's life, if you take, you know, the best 40 minutes of that week, it's going to be entertaining one way or another. And sometimes you can kind of anticipate what's going to come and what you want to focus on. And sometimes you let it rip, and then other times they're real scripted. So that's really kind of the hallmark, I think, of what a producer can do in reality documentary TV.
How much of a, because you're a writer and a producer, but how much pressure is there? And I'm not necessarily talking about your own experience, but just being in the industry and knowing other people. How much do you think in general is on the producer by higher ups, the network or whomever you might say, to say, well, you have to massage this, you have to manipulate it in order to make it more interesting to get better ratings?
I mean, that definitely can. It can definitely happen. It's usually not so bald. It's more like, you know, they want to see something that they think is funnier or better or more shocking, and you might not agree.
Right.
But but you know, it really so like so many things in life is very dependent on what show you're working on and what situation. Like for example, if you do a true crime show, there's no pressure to do that because you can get into some, you know, hot water.
Right.
You
right.
can't play too much with, you know, court cases and people's actual lives. So they can be sensationalized with music or with certain things, but you know, those you don't tend to make too much stuff up in those shows.
Have you ever
but
been
if it's, you know,
go ahead, sorry.
Go ahead, sorry. But I was just gonna say if it's like, where's Atlantis? You might find yourself making more up on a show like that.
So have you ever been part of a pitch like to a network executive or a studio?
I've written them, and you know, I've been in the room on a few things. Yeah.
So what's that like for people that don't know? I mean, the pitch is basically when you have an idea and you're a producer or whatever, and you're going in to get the green light or get the funding. And this is like the kind of the do or die moment. You know, from the outside, that's how we perceive it. Is that in reality? I mean, is it like the old Seinfeld episode where you know you go in and pitch this to Warren Littlefield or whatever NBC? Or is it that kind of casual? Or is there a lot more to it?
There's definitely some sales energy. it's really like, I wish I could remember what this was, but there was something I saw once that a person was talking about, how it's really just like a lot of it comes down to kind of getting people excited about the idea, which really is what sales is anyway. And that's kind of what happens. There's a transference and, you know, if people are excited and if it also has to kind of meet what they're looking for. They all have goals, what kind of shows they're trying to find. But like, you know, it can be really kind of a rush when those things go well. And it can be not so much of a rush. You can definitely tell if you're drowning as it's happening. But sometimes you can turn it around. You know?
Right, right. Have you ever been like in a pitch or with a meeting with it? I'm not going to tell you, I ask you to name names or anything, but have you ever been in a pitch or with a studio or an executive and you know you've nailed this and you've got it down, it's a great idea, and this Yahoo just is completely nutso and says, how about this person, you know, being X, Y, and Z, and you're like, is this person in reality?
Yeah, have I? Yes.
I mean, what do you think? You put in all the work and then you get this nut job. I mean, go ahead.
I try to my approach to television and life is kind of similar in the sense that I believe in radical acceptance.
I like
so
that.
So I try to look at the situation that's happening, and I try to accept it as what's happening and see what the best approach is and what the best way to take this is. And if there's something I can salvage out of it or build on, you know, and sometimes somebody has an idea and you're like, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. And like a week later, you're the biggest fan of it. You love it the most because you've somehow clicked into what they were seeing, you know? So you got to keep an open mind is how I kind of look at it.
Are you part of the Writers Guild of America?
I am not. Unfortunately, most people in documentary and reality are not part of the guild, which is kind of the legacy of when that industry sort of started. You know, it was cheaper programming, which is why it kind of became so big. So, unfortunately, no, I'm not part of that union or those struggles. But, you know, the impact of that is interesting because there's been times where when the guild would go on strike, a lot of work would flow to the kind of reality world. And this time it's a little different because there's so much streaming television.
I wondered about that. Are we going to see, because I've talked to other people that are, you know, tangentially involved. They're saying this strike could go into next year. And so your first thought is, oh, we're just going to see all kinds of reality programming this fall. Is that your sense or not?
You know, I don't know. It's really a good question. That's definitely what happened the last time there was a strike. But, I would be wary of guessing that only because there's so much content. I mean, not to put myself out of a job, but if no one ever made a second of television again, you know, you could watch television until your eyes popped out. You'd never see the same thing twice.
Right.
So, and now there's other mediums and there's other formats that also, you know, vie for people's attention. So you've really got to get good ideas and you've really got to get kind of fun things out there for people to stop and say, okay, I'm purposely going to watch this.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, it's definitely kind of, it's challenging time, but that's kind of always when exciting stuff happens.
How has this affected you, this move to streaming now and content on demand? How has that affected you from a writer and a producer of how you develop ideas for production?
Yeah. Definitely it's made everything faster. Mm-hmm. And it's generally made a lot of things cheaper.
Really?
I mean, you know, not to dismantle the dream machine.
Right. I mean, like, in terms of like the people that, you know, like the size of your production crew, or how has it made it cheaper?
Oh, yeah, that's one way. I mean, you just got, you know, just looking at it from a purely business standpoint, like any other business, if there is a lot of content, that's a lot of opportunity, but you don't get the same kind of premium for it. And it has to be done much quicker. And, you know, people are making shows about something, you know, you're also competing against an immediate medium now with the internet and social media. So, you know, something happens, somebody has cut together a show on it in months, not a year.
Wow. That's incredible.
So, you know, that kind of stuff is difficult to compete with. You just have to really go further in depth or have a fresh, very unique take on it. But I would say it's both created a lot of opportunities, and then it's kind of changing the nature of some of the opportunities. You know, when I started working, you would have, without fail, you'd have 8 months to kind of wrap up a show in post-production easily. And I mean, now you don't even get half that. It's very quick, you know.
Wow. That's incredible.
So just like everything else, that's kind of the, you know, the economic reality of making television is kind of sometimes it's what drives the industry, basically.
We are talking with Janet Ginsberg. She is a writer-producer in Hollywood. We appreciate her time with us today. A couple of minutes before the first break, Janet, and one of the shows that you did or helped produce was on National Geographic called Story of God with Morgan Freeman, one of the people that I have always been fascinated with. Give us a little insight. What's he like to work with? What's he like as an artist?
Oh, man. He is not an intimidating person, but he is an intimidating presence. Like, he's fantastic, but, you know, you're just, it's Morgan Freeman. It's the
right
voice of God. If he tells you to hand him something, you do it. You just, it's really funny. Like the first, I remember him making a joke with me, you know, kind of in a grumpy joke.
Uh-huh.
Saying, oh, you know, get out of here. I had no idea he was joking. I was like, oh, man, I can't, this man with this voice is just, so he's great. He, you know, that show was epic. It was a all around the world kind of show.
Yep.
And you know, 70 days one after the other for the people who travel out in the field. On that show, wow. We didn't travel, but just, you know, you're calling Notre Dame and the Vatican and trying to get the, you know, the Pope to talk to you. It's crazy.
Right.
It's crazy, but we really got some beautiful, beautiful stuff out of that and very thoughtful stuff and really unique people. And yeah, he's just awesome. He's
That's
like
great.
The most professional person, like sitting in a room and hearing him say something you wrote down is just like, oh, I can't believe this has happened.
That'll give me goosebumps to hear my writing come out of Morgan Freeman's mouth. Stay with us. So we have Janet Ginsburg. She is a writer, producer. We're going to ask her about her time on The Daily Show. Give us some insight on the Todd Allball Show after this on Civic Media's Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show. It is now 10 minutes before the hour of 3 o'clock. That is 2:50 on the time and temperature sign on the Civic Media Radio Network. Coming up at 3 o'clock, network news across the state of Wisconsin. And then it is Matt Flynn Direct with our friend and colleague, Matt Flynn. Do not miss it. Always informative. Give you a chuckle as well. Matt Flynn Direct after the news at the top of the hour. Right now we have the honor and privilege of having with us Janet Ginsburg live from the Hollywood Hills, or at least Los Angeles area. She is a writer and a producer. One of the things, Janet, we appreciate you being with us, and you started, or at least one of the things you started on, was something that's near and dear to Wisconsinites' heart, particularly those of us here in Madison, The Onion. You're a veteran or an alum of The Onion.
That's right, yes. That is my Wisconsin comedic roots.
How long did you work for The Onion?
Oh, gosh. I would say somewhere in the neighborhood of year and a half. Very early on, I was lucky. You know, it was back then notoriously difficult to get started or get into it. It was like all local Wisconsinites who kind of had grown up together. And
yeah.
I was fortunate enough to, I just took a shot. And I was like, I don't have, you know, if I fail, I already don't have a job at The Onion. So what's the worst thing?
What do you got to lose, right?
Is, yeah. Yeah. So it worked out. It changed my life. There were so many amazing people there, and it was like just the best. To me, for my money, it's still like top tier comedy what we were doing then, and I just awesome.
Fantastic. One of the other great shows that you've worked on, something that I love, The Daily Show, and with Jon Stewart at the time. What was it like to be on that show and just to be in that environment? And I guess, what point were you working on the show? Because whether it's Stephen Colbert or, you know, so many others that came out of that show, it had to be an amazing opportunity to be around that talent.
Oh, yeah. It was pretty much the height of the show. And in fact, my one of my first pieces there was John Oliver's first piece for the show.
Wow, really?
So, yeah. So, and he was like, firing on all cylinders right away. He's just hilarious and game. I had him running around in like 2 foot high snow back and forth. He had no problem with it. Loved it. You know, he was obviously just like going to be a huge star, which of course he is.
Right.
It was amazing. It was like the type of thing where like you walk in there at 9:30 in the morning and, you know, they've got to have a show before the end of the day, and everybody there was just an enormous talent, and it's kind of amazing, kind of crazy they were able to make something on that pace and do it for so long.
What's it like to like you say, you go out in the morning, and one of the keys to those kind of shows is, you know, being relevant in the news of that day or last 24-hour, 12-hour cycle. Are people just going nuts? Are they scatterbrained or not scatterbrained, but is there this sense of just urgency and like, what the hell are we going to do? Or is it just kind of a calmness throughout the day?
Oh, it is like the most professional, calmest,
really?
Going nuts you've ever seen. Like, people who are just so, they are aware, obviously, of the amount of pressure they have to put that show together. You know, they're going to tape it that night. But I mean, you couldn't have that job if you didn't have a very particular disposition. Like,
right.
The people putting it together, the relevant, like, timely day-to-day aspects of it are just, like, trust them with your life, because they can do anything and just be incredibly calm about it.
Well, One of my favorite programs right now streaming is The Problem with Jon Stewart. And give us some insight as someone who's been around Jon Stewart, or at least worked on the show. I mean, his brain, to have the comedic timing and that part, but also just the intelligence side of this. He's a fantastic interviewer.
Yeah, he's brilliant. What's funny is I actually have a good friend who's working on that show now. And
really?
It's funny you mentioned the pace and then go to that, because I can tell you that's one thing. That show is a lot more relaxed.
Okay, I bet.
I think, you know, that gives everybody kind of a chance to kind of spread out, you know. So I think he's probably pretty happy in that element, because he gets time to do things in a real, not serious manner, but, you know, a daily show is a grind.
Yeah.
And it's exhausting. And now I think they have a little bit more room to kind of get into some topics they care about and really take like a very personal John kind of look at him.
In your opportunity of being at the Daily Show, did you have a lot of time like around Jon Stewart? Like, I mean, just, what kind of guy is he? Is he somebody who's kind of friendly and egalitarian and putting the show together? Or is it like, no, this is what I want to do and this is what we're going to do?
No, he's pretty great. I mean, you know, there's not a lot of time, period,
right. When
you're making the type of show that we were. So it's not like you're just sitting there shooting the breeze, because there's quite a bit going on. And depending on what aspect you're in, I was not a daily writer there. I was doing the field pieces, which is the ones where they kind of went out and talked to some, you know, somebody who had something to say.
Right,
they found
right. Someone.
And so we're doing a lot of traveling and running around. And then you come back and you kind of work through the pieces with them. John would sit down and watch them, and you kind of go through everything with them. So you're there. Kind of you're setting up for the pieces and workshopping them before you go, and then you're out in the field making them, and you come back and kind of put them together. But even that's pretty rapid.
About
there's pretty much no time to think.
I can only imagine. About 2 minutes left in the show. It always goes quickly. But Janet Ginsburg, what are two of your top projects that you've taken from conception and made into reality? Something that's near and dear to your heart.
Oh gosh, that's really a crazy tough question, especially with 2 minutes left.
I'm sorry. I should have asked it sooner.
Since I can't think of the answer, I'll just mention a show I actually worked on that's going to be premiering on Saturday for the Nat Geo Wild program, which is Extraordinary Birder, which was a birding show with Christian Cooper, which is a first. Not a lot of birding on TV. Kind of a challenge to figure out how you're going to make that exciting. But it's, you know, I think it turned out great. He's fantastic and very funny, and the birds were amazing. So that's coming on this Saturday, and I believe it'll be on Disney and Hulu on the 21st.
That's fantastic. Anybody who might be listening says, I like to be in television or writing. Advice to them.
Oh, give me a call.
Is it? I've heard other people say, just start writing. Just do it every day and practice the craft.
You know, if you can make it happen. Basically, if it's really something you want, it's like anything else. If you really want it, you can do it. And the more you do it from your own heart and from your own ability, the more unique you are and the better you're going to do. So, you know, if you have, like anything else, if you've got a dream, you want to do it, you got to go after it.
Janet Ginsburg, you have done it remarkably well. We appreciate your time. Thanks for being with us today. Writer, producer, and we'll hopefully talk to you again soon. Thank you so very much for being here. We appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you, Todd. Thank you.
My pleasure. That is Janet Ginsburg. She is a writer and producer in Hollywood. Amongst her many travels was on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. We appreciate the insight. We appreciate our other guests as well, Phil Nee and Henry Bray, on calling that great game on WRCO. The Ithaca Bulldogs are Division IV state baseball champions. We appreciate Phil and Henry being here. Also, Jason Stein, Vice President and Director of Research at Wisconsin Policy Forum. And, of course, Janet Ginsburg for being here as well. And above all, you for listening. Our producers, Aaron Zommer and Mr. Evan Preston as well. We'll see you tomorrow. Stay tuned now for Matt Flynn Direct right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, whatever you believe in, keep fighting for it and keep banging your drum.